Saints, all Saint Mary without us marched and put into trenches. Watching the Germans as they advanced toward us, seeing them dive like rabbits into the burrows as they kept pushing nearer, much too nearer for my liking, until I began to run low in ammunition. Although you remember, I've written this a long while ago, but no need to worry, as there were thousands of rounds lying around us. As I was about to do this, I got the shock of my life. Not a live soul was around. Everyone seemed to have disappeared, with the exception of many dear comrades and many wounded all around me. How terrible. I was alone. Oh God, what do I do? Do I surrender? What will they do to me? I've given them all I've got. They are bound to give me a going over. I said, oh no, Jerry, not yet. Not if I've still got two good legs. The terrain behind me was fairly undulating, and I had a feeling the French were not a long way away, as I'd seen about 500 on horseback. Yes, I can see them now, on a great big bridge going over on the viaduct a few hours earlier. But now I was all alone. If home means anything to a loner, it did to me. Then all the while, Jerry was getting nearer, then I was going to retreat and have your word. I must get a move on. I'd been at it nearly all morning, and it was getting afternoon. Food and drink were out of the question. Firstly, I probably got a tin of bully beef, and not a very appetizing. Four inch by quarter thick, hard biscuit. So the sector I'd been fighting on was entirely held by just one man. And not a soul in sight. It's hardly believable. But on one knows this in any heroic fashion, God forbid, that this is one of those in a million happenings. I eventually made my way towards what I hoped was with some of my own regiment. But to my surprise, I met up with a French regiment. When after much explaining, were eventually satisfied and put me en route to Amiens. Yes, I forget all about it.
Yes, don't worry. You carry on. You're doing well.
I slept in a shed loft, for I was dead tired. Here I was all on my own. The area being occupied by the French. After an hour or two of sleep, I was on my way again, and later arrived at Amiens, where all stragglers, as we were then known, taken to a nearby camp where we rested for a few hours, only to be taken back to the front again. Cool. Makes me feel bad. This was at night time, and Jerry was about 3 kilometers away. If I recall correctly, these were there were about 100 of us, which I had previously termed stragglers, and included a colonel. We were all a mixed conglomeration of specimen of what was a few days previously part of the British Army. Us few men, or boys if you like, were surprised to creep back to Peron. I think it was capture it and to take the Germans by surprise. Yeah, I remember that. The colonel had a horse to ride on, whilst Tommy had to walk. I remember we came on to a cobbled road, a very long one, leading directly into Peron. Yes, I can see it, I can see it. We were told by the colonel to be quiet and go as lightly on our heavy field boots as possible. Can you appreciate this order? What about the horse? He had no rubber boots to put on him, so it was a metal on granite the whole way. We could hear, one could hear us a mile away. Occasionally, a shell wouldn't be far away. We anticipated Jerry would be busy adjusting his line of advance, changing his tired troops, bringing up shells and ammunition and rations, so as to continue his advance at early light. At the same time, having his outpost on guard in case the British were snooping around. That's all we're going to
do. That's absolutely marvellous, Bill. Now, let me ask you one or two questions. In all this terrible background, there must have been the odd moment that was funny. Can you ever recall any funny incident?
No, I cannot. I cannot. And you just amongst yourself, and that would be when you were out of the line. All I can face is gruesome happening. That seeing tracks tied for the widow in public, that passes by.
That was still punishment, was it?
Yeah. Mm. And that should never have been. Mm. I think very degrading, very despicable. A soldier's wage had been named. That's a very, it's done very little wrong, but you've got to pay for it. That's a regard to it. Funny games. I don't think that's happened in our case. The only time of pleasure, if I can call it, was waiting to be discharged. But we were sent off out of the war, sent down to Boulogne, our battalion, to Assouren, I couldn't believe it, and discharged troops coming from various fronts, various areas. And I was there as a sergeant. I suppose I was there for well over a year, demobilizing, that's the word, demobilizing. And I had the most happiest time in France that I had had at all. I was able to go out if I wanted to down to the town, my boss. I just told my men what I wanted to do. I had an easy time. But I was also, before that, the Chinese were sent over, some Chinese, to help the British in their labors. And there was, quite a number of Chinese down in Boulogne, got a camp there. And at night time, they always used to walk to their place of work. I think was bread making and various chores. And they used to pass through our camp. I was in charge of the guard one night. And I got a nasty, beastly Irish prisoner. He was a devil. And he got a dog. He's a Lantagus dog. And the Chinese were walking past our guard one night. Why I didn't know of it at the time, I don't know. But this prisoner picked up a stone and threw behind the Chinese. He started running for the stone and bit one of the Chinese. All there was, I had never heard. We kept waiting, thinking, well, they will forget that and they won't let you go, old boy, either. I roused all the camp, saw the officer, told him about it, roused all the camp to be prepared, because the Chinese might come back as a whole, didn't know how many there was, and create a disturbance that fortunately didn't happen. But I felt terrible, I felt terrible.
Why was this Irishman there? Why was the Irishman in the clink?
Because he'd done something wrong.
Yes, what had he done? Do you know? Can you recall what he'd done?
Probably been drunk.
Yeah.
Or had been drunk. Mm.
Did you ever have any...
There's some things I can't divulge.
Oh, I understand that.
I can't publicise.
Did you ever...
Diplomatic thing.
Did you ever engage in any hand-to-hand fight?
No.
With your hands and what was it?
No. Thank God.
And what was the... suppose when you were up in the front line, you were lucky if you got anything to eat and drink.
I won't say that. You usually got through the night time, you see. And you eventually got your rations. There was this war, someone had to go for rations. For your company, or for your battalion, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's one experience that I can remember going. And this chap of mine, this friend, mate of mine, he's a mate of mine, came from Chelmsford. And we kept friends until he got killed. And coming back, we got onto no man's land. I forget where this was, what front it was. And we lost ourselves, couldn't find our line. We went past the cutting. And he started crying like a child. "He's man, you where are we, Bill?" "Cool," he said, "we should run into the..." I said, leave off, do." But we eventually benched him and managed it. The third leg went up, and that's how we was able to find our way back. That was a terrible time, that was, because we had walked straight into Jerry, and I wonder he didn't fire at us then, but he didn't.
Did you ever experience gassing at all up at the city?
Yes. Oh, and the stinking old stuff, these blooming helmets I had on. Just a bag, that's all. This was just the beginning, mind you. When I say beginning, it's the brilliant 17 that's still been used then, mind you. Oh, yes, I remember that. Nasty old stuff, nasty. There'd be warnings given, so you'd be prepared. I felt that, Mr. Weller.
Yeah.
But they eventually died out. Thank goodness. Ypres and Messines in that area, where the war world would say, without any doubt, was the hottest place that you ever go to, the war. That is absolutely intact. Trees of them, a tree at all. There might have been a trench, but not much, you know. Cool. Terrible place. Terrible.
You didn't get to the Somme battle.
Yes.
Were you at the Somme, were you?
Yes. There were two or three battles there.
That's right.
I wasn't at the beginning. I was 16, I think.
Yes, that's right. You weren't there in 16. It was later when the...
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, when they moved up. That's right.
Yeah. And we moved from Memphis and Quentin. It wasn't there at the end of the British line. It was fairly quiet, that's in Quentin. Well, with all this terrible stuff building up quarter for the war.
Were you up there, up in the salient when they took Passchendaele?
I was there. I can't recall. There'd been a battle between the Messines and Ypres. There was a battle there, and after the first day, it poured and poured and poured, and we couldn't move. We got stuck in the mud. And that was a terrible time, that was. Terrible time. I can't recall whereabouts it was, but it was in one of those very hot places. Terrible. And I don't think the attack was made till some time after that. Spoiled everything, couldn't move, guns or nothing. There's so much mud, filth about, you know. Oh dear.
So you were discharged, what, in 1920?
1918.
You were actually discharged from the army, were you, in
1918? Yeah. No, 19.
19, that's, yes. What did you do after you were discharged, Bill? Did you find it difficult to settle down?
Well, it took a long time. I went home. I got very good parents. My father was a village carpenter, bless his heart. He used to be the undertaker in the will, like you know. And my father was an Essex man, my mother was a Kentish girl who lived at Folkestone. And she had a brother who was a builder. He used to build a lot of houses in Folkestone. And after I'd been home a little while, I had a letter come from him. And he wrote, "Dear Bill, seeing that you're home, which I'm glad for you and the family, and for what you've done, I'm offering you an apprenticeship. Just consider it, well, and if you'd like to, I'll take you through the building trade." Prior to that, I'd been helping my dad, and I said, "Yes, I'd like to." And that's what I did.
Oh, very good.
And I found my wife down there, got married eventually, and makes it most extraordinary. I was a little choir boy at my home, Finchingfield. My father's a great churchman. There's one heroic from that church. That's a tad behind him. Chromium plays a tad behind him.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Got an inscription on, you can look at it, you know. And I climbed the tower. I got struck by lightning. And the ladder just touching the ridge with 90 feet down the bow. And a brother of mine was on the ladder below. I'm going off a rock, aren't I?
No, that's just an interesting, huh?
But we had a jug kept up in buckets of water, throwing up into the lantern that caught fire. I was coming home from work about 5 o'clock in the thunderstorm. We don't get them these days. And it turns like a terror. People running around, the church is on fire, the church is on fire, but they didn't know anything about it. But there were three boys of us, and we got cracking. My father, as I say, was a great churchman. He was a sexton, too, all for nothing. And, of course, I was the oldest of the boys, so I took the leading role. Anyway, they would put this fire out, and the church is still going, and I repaired it, put a new tower up to it. It was all wood on top of the stone, you see. 90 feet up. Yeah. I got 1-2 photographs of that, taken from that, showing the village. Dear, dear, dear.
You didn't get wounded during the war, did you?
No, my buckle on my shoulder got broke. Broke right in half, brass. And that saved me from getting a wound on my shoulder blade. I don't know what would happen.
You were very lucky, weren't you?
Yeah. I would have kept that, but I never... Yeah. I didn't want nothing of war. I didn't want nothing of it. Nothing of it. Now, that's why my... Going back to Folkestone, that's where I went. And I stayed there for about 12 years, I think. And... I lodged first with my uncle and aunt, the little ones, and they found me some lodgings, which was the best, you know. And these people were Baptist people, the church up the road, a place called Cheriton. It's a much bigger place now, the tunnels there. And they got me to go to this church, you see. I hadn't been when I'd turned, although I was loyal to the church,
I hadn't been sort of a very staunch member. And I became converted at this Baptist chapel. Where I was lodging, a young lady used to visit this house, friends. You see, she was also belonged to the church. And of course we met, couldn't help it. Got married, and that's the club that was given to us.
Oh, lovely.
And formed a Sunday school. Later on, they had a minister, Baptist minister and his wife, and they got a little boy. And we got friendly just before we came away. I went back to my father, a Pinchfield, because he'd fallen from a tree and broke his leg. So I had to go home and help him. My other brothers were away from home. I stayed with him for about 12 months until one of my other brothers came back home again with his wife. I don't know what I went away for. I launched out on my own and went to about 4 miles away, another village. And I invited these people, parson and his wife, because they came to a village well known to Spurgeon. You heard of C.H. Spurgeon, have you? He used to live down there, and he wrote a book about a big new age. He used to arrange his sermons walking up and down when he lived there. And these people went to that house, happened to go to that house to their relations who lived there, who were 7 miles away. And they told me they were coming down to place called Stanbourne. I said, I only live a few miles from there, perhaps you'll come over and have a cup of tea with us. I'll come over and face you. Got a car? And they did.